Hey everyone, John of Papa's Basement here. I have another great guest for you this week, Dr. Steve, host of Weird Medicine, the world's first uncensored medical advice show. I love it. I listen to it religiously. The guy is funny as hell. He gave a great interview. Please, please, please get to the end. The end is maybe the hardest I've ever laughed on this show with a guest. Incredibly, incredibly funny. All right, guys, without further ado, here's my interview with Dr. Steve. For those of you into SiriusXM, it's a double treat the past couple weeks. I know last week I managed to get a producer of the Opie and I guess now Opie and Jimmy show, Eric E-Rock Nagel, on the show. And this week I have Dr. Steve. If you're a fan of Opie and Anthony, you no doubt are quite aware of Dr. Steve and his great show, Weird Medicine. It's also available as a podcast, which I've been getting deep into the podcast as of late. Steve, I just wanted to welcome you to the show.
Wow, what a letdown from last week with
Please,
the great Eric Nagel and then me.
Eric,
I'll try to live up to that.
Be honest, Eric did a solid hour.
No, Eric's 15. Great.
Yeah, he killed, man. I wanted to say that, yeah, I initially got you on the show by promising to talk about Homeland, a show that we're both apparently deeply into, and I feel like we are two of maybe four people into that show.
Oh, is that right? Is it not? It was one of the huge shows when it first came out, and then I think people got burned out with Brody's family.
I think by season two, people were losing steam on it, and I'm one of those people that, like, I'm picky about what I do enjoy, but once I get into it, I will drive it into the ground.
Yeah.
So it never crossed my mind to abandon ship, and I feel we're...
Well, yeah, me neither, but I didn't... I don't think that it's something that I have to grind through. I think this fourth season's the best season they've ever had.
I'll be honest, I've enjoyed them all. I'm not that picky. I've had fun with all. We will get to Homeland in a bit, but
okay,
I just wanted to get to, like, do a general interview with you, because I find
sure.
you, in all truth, like, a very fascinating figure. Again, for those that don't know, I'm serious.
You don't know me very well.
No, for those that aren't aware of Dr. Steve, he does a... You brand it as what, the first uncensored medical radio show?
Yes, it
out
was
there?
The first uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, yes.
Yeah, he puts out a show, Weird Medicine, and that allows him to... he's just able to put a lot of personality into the show on air, and he's also able to take some fairly, both pedestrian questions, but kind of dirty ones as well.
Yep. And I don't think there's any dirty questions, but I know what you, if for terrestrial radio, we would be unsuitable. And the thing is I patterned my show after Dina Dell's show. So this is not an original idea to do a medical talk show where you answer questions. But Dina Dell was a guy that did an hour a day answering medical questions. And I used to listen to him. I loved this guy because everything he talked about was evidence-based. And he gave out really good information. It was very entertaining, too. And hearing other people's problems is always entertaining. But I wanted to do an uncensored version. And to do that, you can't do it on terrestrial radio. You got to do it on satellite radio. And the other difference is we take our calls on the fly, whereas Dean Adele would have people call in, at least so I understand, and they would take down their name and number and find out what they were calling about, and he would do a little research and then have them, quote-unquote, call in the next day, and then he would answer their questions. And so we do ours on the fly because I just don't have a producer who can take down names and numbers and stuff and hand them to me and let me answer them later. So that was sort of the genesis of this thing. And... Opie and Anthony had put out a notice to their fans that if you had an idea for a radio show, give them a call or send them an email, because they had some capacity to put some things on Saturday night, and they would consider any ideas. And at that time, I was the medical advisor for the channel anyway, but I was behind the scenes. I was never on the air. And I just said, hey, I got this idea of doing a medical talk show, but we can make it uncensored. And that way we can answer questions that without regard to the content. It wasn't so much that I wanted to drop F-bombs. It was that I could allow the the caller to use normal language when they're describing, for example, their genitalia.
Yeah.
And without having to censor it and go, oh, you can't say that on the air. You know, they can say anything they want. And that sort of freed things up. Of course, as time went on, we've been doing this 8 years now, that I sort of liberalized my speech too. So, yes, I do drop the occasional F-bomb. Usually directed at my co-host, who's an idiot.
G-Vet, correct?
No, I was thinking T.A. John. Because he tries to be funny, and sometimes I have to put him, say a few words to him. But I found I don't have to be funny because I'm not naturally a funny person. But the material itself is entertaining enough that I don't have to try to be funny. And P.A. John just hasn't figured that out yet after 8 years.
Feel he tries too hard?
Yeah, well, I don't. He just tries, and sometimes he nails it, and other times I have to, call him names. So
you got like 8 of my questions done just with that speech. No, it's amazing.
I'm very long-winded.
No, it's awesome. The first question I have, though, what the hell's a medical advisor to the Opie and Anthony channel do exactly?
Right. Okay, well, so what happened was back in the day, when they first started, Jim Norton, who is one of the hosts of that show, and Ron Bennington, who is one of the hosts of the Ron and Fez show that was also on that channel, used to be on this thing called AOL Instant Messenger. And you could run into them every once in a while, and I would just, and they'd be on there talking to people, and you could just send them an instant message and say, hey, I'm a fan, love the show, and all that stuff. And Jim, at that time, said, and this was the only reason I can talk about this, because he immediately talked about it on the air the next day. He said, hey, are you a real doctor? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, I've got a lump on, this part of my anatomy, and what do you think about it? And so we talked back and forth. I asked him a couple of questions, gave him some advice. And he went on the next day and said, I was talking to this doctor in Tennessee about this lump on my genitalia, and of course Anthony at that point, he didn't know me, and he just said, yes, well, of course we all know all the best doctors are in Tennessee. And it made me so dang mad that he said that. I was laughing, but it was like, well, I'll show you guys. And so I sent him my curriculum vitae, aka my resume, the next day. I faxed it in. And I'm not tooting my own horn, but I'm the editor in chief of a national medical journal, and I've got about 100 articles in the medical literature, and I'm a professor at a couple of medical schools, and blah 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 blah. And I said, here, take that if you're going to criticize doctors from Tennessee. And they found it funny that I did that, and so we struck up a bit of a friendship. It was a little tentative at first, but then they would ask me things behind the scenes. What do you think about this? Sometimes it was a medical problem they had, but a lot of times, do you remember the cinnamon challenge?
Oh, just eating a bunch of cinnamon, if I recall right.
Right, yeah. Which, by the way, I do not recommend. I think it's a bad idea, but they asked me about it. Do you think this would be safe to do? I said no. They did it anyway, but those were the kinds of things behind the scenes that I was involved in.
And if I recall, I don't want to interrupt, Eric yep. Nagel almost choked to death doing that, right?
Yes. Yeah, they almost had to call emergency medical services on him. Since the outcome was okay, it's now funny to go back and listen to.
Yeah.
If he had ended up in the hospital, it would have been, the fact that they were doing it live without trying it first and didn't pre-record it could have been evidence in a court of law.
Oh, they were that close to being the Wii for Wii contest.
Right, but it turned out okay. And, other people, there's lots of cinnamon challenges on YouTube, and they're all funny as long as they turn out okay. So I do not recommend that. There were reasons why I recommended that they not do it, but they did it anyway, and that's cool. I don't demand that they do what I tell them to do, and I don't demand anything. They just ask me questions. I give them the answer to the best of my ability, and what they do with it is up to them.
I the amount to which you have permeated that show, given your relationship to them, it's amazing to me. Just, I can't tell you, even in my car, like, for no reason, my brother and I both listen to the station a lot. whenever we utter the word fluid, it's always spoken as Dr. Steve. I think.
Oh, that's so ridiculous.
Anyone that listens to Opie and Anthony can do a fluid.
Now, you know, if I say it,
you have to say it. Yeah.
Then I have, and I find my, and I realize that I do. I mean, I say it a lot. If you're going to talk about medical stuff, you're going to be talking about fluids, especially if you're talking about the things I'm talking about,
yeah,
which are, you know, abscesses and, you know, secretions from different parts of the body and all that kind of stuff. You're going to end up saying the word fluid a lot. And so it's become my just the word that's associated with me. And I think it's hilarious. It's just so funny because when they first started making fun of me, just the way I talk and my vocal crutches and all that stuff, I thought it was hilarious. That's how I knew that I was part of the club, was when they started making fun of me, because they really don't do that unless they despise you, which I knew that they didn't, or if they really like you. If they just don't think about you, you just don't get mentioned. So
that's awesome.
I sent in some wine to those guys. I'm an amateur winemaker, and they did 45 minutes on what a goofball I was and all the horrible things that they imagined that I must make my wine out of, given my profession. And it was the funniest thing. And you know, people were like, gosh, does that not bother you that they just called you those names and they made fun of you for so long? It's like, no, this means they like me. And I loved it. It's one of my favorite things in radio that I was never a part of.
Yeah, I just want you to know that their mentions of your wine go well beyond that 45 minutes.
Oh, I know.
I think years after the fact, I heard the term Dr. Steve Swill wine bandied
yes,
about.
Right.
Always.
Well, Swill was the nicest thing they said about it.
Now, you've touched on this a bit so far, but I just wanted to ask again and clarify, the show, and this might elicit a laugh from you, the show is not your livelihood, correct?
It is. That's correct.
Yeah.
No. I thought it was going to be because, you know, Dean Adell made a living doing it. And when we finished our first show on October 13th, 2007, Anthony Cumia of the Opie and Anthony Show, who, whether you agree with his views or not, he was one of the biggest names in radio at the time, and came up to us and said that was the best first show that I've ever heard. And we were on cloud nine, and we walked out of the studio at West 57th and looked up at the Parker Meridian, and they have condos up there in that building. And P.A. John and I were like, we need to get one of these condos. I wonder how much one of these costs, because we're going to need to have a place in Manhattan that we can crash in when we're commuting to the city to do our show. And then, of course, that first year, we did everything for free. And then the second year, we started doing our show more regularly, and we were doing it for free. And then the third year, we were doing it monthly, and we were doing it for free. And then we realized we probably aren't going to make enough to buy coffee at Starbucks in Manhattan, much less have a condo in Manhattan. We are getting paid now, but I got a check the other day for $23 from SiriusXM because we skipped a show and everything went to taxes. So yeah, we're not making any money doing that. I really wanted to do it because they have given me so much joy on that channel and the Ron and Fez show that I just wanted to give something back. And sending them cigars or sending them gifts at the holidays just didn't seem like enough. And this is a way that I could give back to their, it's weird, but giving back to their fans just free medical advice somehow seemed like it was payback for all the joy that they've given me. Because I got to be honest with you, there was a time in my life, and it was right around 2005, that I was very depressed and wasn't sure that I could keep getting up every day and doing my job. And those guys on satellite radio are the guys that kind of, they had a lot to do with pulling me out of that funk. And I just really feel like I owe him something. And it's, you know, so doing it for free or for the pittance that we make is perfectly okay with me, because it just feels like payback, if that makes any sense at all. And I know it doesn't make sense. They gave me something, so I'm giving something to SiriusXM, which is free services, but I'm doing something for their fans. But somehow to me, that it makes sense.
No, it makes sense to me. Actually, my next question was, given your quality as a broadcaster, because I think anyone hearing you can hear that you speak well, you can carry a conversation, and a lot of people who are on air and making a lot of money, I feel, aren't of your caliber. I don't have to cite like the Kardashians. Like I think they have radio shows right now and stuff like that.
Right.
And I mean,
I don't have a sex tape, so that's why I don't have their level of fame. And if there, I did have one, it would be
it would
a
only
different.
Hurt.
Right. It would only hurt. It would be a different sort of fame, and it wouldn't be good. But it's I don't know. I'm not really a broadcaster. My original degree was in radio, television, and motion pictures from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and I worked in TV. I was an audio engineer, and I did camera for Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, and was involved in their whole thing in the 70s. And I always wanted to find a way that I could meld those two things, because I really did it just because it was an easy major and I was too afraid to go to medical school at the time. And later on, when I got the cojones to actually drop everything and go back to school and go to medical school, I set aside my radio and television career. But there was always that part of me that wanted to put those two things together. And, I've achieved that. That, to me, is part of that goal, and that I've achieved in my life was I got to put radio and medicine together and can do this. And I don't care if it's not my career. I like my career as a physician and wouldn't want to give it up. So this is kind of a fun thing. So it's a hobby, but it's sort of a super hobby, if it makes any sense. It's a little more than a hobby, less than a career. But I've met so many great people. I've got so many friends that I've met through doing this, including my comedian friends who I don't treat them long distance, but I can advise them long distance. And, like Robert Kelly has become a friend. We spent Thanksgiving together. One of the greatest guys in the world, Greg Hughes, the actor who plays Opie on the Opie and Anthony channel. He is a true friend. I mean, our families know each other and we hang out. You know, I'm friends with Anthony. I'm friends with a lot of the different comedians that I interact with. And I've got listeners who have become friends as well. And so it's expanded my life. My wife isn't into the whole radio thing, but she's also friends. I mean, she appreciates the fact that we have friends that she can hang out with. She's friends with Bob Kelly's wife. She's friends with Greg Hughes's wife. She enjoys just making the trip to New York. I mean, it's done nothing but make our lives better.
All right. That touches on my next question then, because your day job, you do work as a doctor. I want to impress that upon people. Dr. Steve, real doctor. It's not like a Dr. J scenario.
Right. Well, right. Yeah, it's and I tell my listeners, too, you don't know if I'm a doctor or not. I say I am. This is for entertainment purposes only, because you got to check out any advice I give you with your regular physician. And we make a real point of that, because how is somebody supposed to know? And on top of that, I don't want the responsibility. I don't know. I'm not taking a complete history, and I'm not doing a physical. I'm doing a radio show, and I'm using people's questions to educate people, but not really to give medical advice per se that people should follow. They always need to take that with a grain of salt and take it to their medical provider and see if it makes sense to them.
My next question, I listened to the show. I love it. And you're an open guy. Like, for example, a couple weeks ago, you just casually threw out there, and I'm kind of the same way on my show that, you know, you just love lesbian porn, lesbians especially with big breasts. Like, does that sort of, and first of all, God bless you, you have excellent taste.
Thank you.
But does that sort of candor ever blow back on you in your professional life? Or are most people like, hey, I want the cool doctor, the guy who talks about this stuff on air?
No, it could. There certainly are people who would not understand some of the things that I say on there, and so that's why I don't use my real name on my show. But, you know, and that's just to have deniability. So I can say, yeah, that guy sounds like me. Not mm-hmm. me, though. Don't know, you know, don't necessarily agree with what that guy's doing on his radio show.
He is handsome, though.
but I, yeah, and the logo for my show is a cartoon that really doesn't look like me. So, but yeah, it could. I get more blowback on stuff I say from my wife. And, you know, and I'm always assuming that no one's listening, too. And that's why I've become so much more open with the things I say. But, you know, when I say things like that, what I'm doing, there is a purpose behind it, is I'm opening it up so that people say, well, if that guy can say this, then there's nothing I can't say to him on his show. So it frees people up to tell me what really going on with their lives, because I did 20 minutes on the most horrific bowel movement I've ever had in my life on my show, and people listening to your show may say, what kind of show is this? I don't want to hear that.
No, they won't.
But I was really I mean, it's something that happened in my life. I'm very honest. I've never, knock on wood, told a lie on my show other than saying this name that isn't mine, you know, about something that's going on with me. I learned that kind of stuff from Howard Stern and from Opie and from Anthony and Jim Norton and Ron Bennington and Fez Watley, that you be honest, and people will respond to you if you're honest. If you do some fake radio persona, it's not going to fly. People will pick up on how fake you are, and some people may enjoy it, but most people won't. And that's not the kind of show I want to do. I want to do an honest show. So, but I talk about those things so other people will feel okay calling in and talking about their things.
All right. Well, I want to take advantage then of your presence on the show and ask you a medical question.
Okay, sure. Because
I figure we can do this and then do a couple seconds on Homeland, and then I will let you get back to your...
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So I had an ex a few years ago who smelled very strongly, just pungently, of fish down there.
Okay.
And I've listened to the show enough and done enough Googling where I'm guessing she had vaginosis.
Probably.
My question to you is, how did she not know she had that, or did she and just didn't care? Because it was overwhelming to me.
Okay.
But what's her story with it?
Well, a couple of things. Yes, she probably had bacterial vaginosis, which is an overwhelming colony of a bacteria called Gardnerella vaginalis. Now, this bacteria is a normal bacteria found in the vagina, but there are other things that are usually found in the vagina as well, including lactobacillus, which proves to me that God has a sense of humor, because the bacteria that makes the vagina a wonderful, sweet-smelling place and is the normal bacteria of the vaginal mucosa is also the exact same bacteria that makes yogurt solid and so tasty. So it just amazes me that these two things could be related, but it shows that God is not also all-knowing and all-good, but also all-efficient, because there, if you can use one thing to do two things, why not do that? So it is the same bacteria, but every once in a while that colony of lactobacillus will be taken over by this colony of Gardnerella vaginalis, and it gives off a very distinctly fishy odor, particularly in the presence of a strong base. So the way that we'll diagnose this is we'll take a sample of vaginal fluid, put it on a slide, and drop potassium hydroxide on it. And then when you do that and you take a sniff, it's called the whiff test. It will enhance that fishy odor, and that is one of the tests that we can do for that. Now, it can be treated. We treat it with lactobacillus. So what you can do is take a small amount of plain yogurt in a and put it in a douche with some warm water and douche with that, or sometimes you can just insert it using a monostat inserter. You know, it's sort of a little syringe thing that comes with monostat where you suck up the monostat. Well, you can suck up yogurt into it too and insert it directly into the vagina. You can also take a medication called metronidazole, which is an antibiotic that kills preferentially Gardnerella vaginalis. But when you do that, you can't drink for the time that you're taking it because it can make you sick. So those are some things that you can do for that. Now, why she didn't know is for the same reason. If you have a cat and a litter box in your house, and you can live in there and never smell a cat, but someone comes in your house and goes, God, how many cats do you have? You know, because there is the nose can only smell certain smells for a period of time, and then that smell goes away, and then the brain just shuts off sensitivity to that smell. And so she couldn't smell it, but you could.
Wow. That is an analogy for the ages. My good Lord.
Well, you know, you could use paint, you know, new paint smell. You put the paint up, and after a day, you don't smell it anymore, but someone else coming in your house can smell it. Everyone, I think, has had that experience where they've gotten what's called tachyphylaxis to the smell, whereas the effect of the smell goes away the longer you smell it. Take a rose, just a nice example, and keep smelling that rose. After a while, you won't be able to smell it anymore. And that's just how the nose works.
God, that is the best answer. Wow.
What the question you should have asked, though, is how do I talk to her about this so that she can get it fixed?
Oh,
it's a completely different question.
You know what? I asked that on air rhetorically after we broke up multiple times. So, yes, please give me that answer.
No, I don't have an answer for you.
Oh, okay.
There's no easy way to do it. You have to be very close to her, and you have to do it very carefully. There's a whole protocol that we have in medicine. It's called Buckman's mnemonic for breaking bad news, and it's called the Spikes mnemonic. And the first thing is setting. You have to have the proper setting. You can't do this while you're driving in a car getting cheeseburgers. You know, you have to have the proper setting. And then you have to find out what the patient's perception is. Do they have any knowledge of it or not? And then you have to, break the bad news in small chunks, and then you have to have empathy, and you have to validate them. Hang on a second. Somebody's trying to get in this room.
Sure.
Let me see who it is. Oh, come on in. Come on in. Okay, it's my resident, so I'm going to have to go. And there's this whole mnemonic for breaking bad news that you have to use, and it would be and then when they start to cry, you have to show empathy and then use validating statements. Like, I think anybody in this situation would feel the same way you do, and those kinds of things. So this isn't a casual conversation that you would have. It needs to be somebody that you know very well. But if it's a deal breaker for you for being around her, then you have to have that conversation. But you have to do it in the most gentle way possible, and then just be ready for the blowback. But then volunteer to go to the OBGYN with her if she wants, and she's going to go, hell no, I don't want you anywhere near me right now. But, mission accomplished, so there you go.
Well, Dr. Steve, thank you so much. hopefully we can do a Homeland talk another time then.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, Homeland. I think we did in the beginning. I'm all in. I can't wait for the finale. This has been the best season ever. If people tapped out after season two, I think they need to get right back into it again, because this has been the most suspenseful of all of the seasons to me. I mean, there's been times when I've been like, I cannot wait to see next week's episode because I am my adrenaline is absolutely pumping. That whole little spoiler, but when she is looking through the drone trying to lead her ex-boss
Saul.
Through the city to get away from the Taliban guys, I thought I was my heart was going to beat out of my chest. I mean, that was brilliantly done. Absolutely brilliantly done.
No, I love the show. Dr. Steve, I figure I have to let you go at this point, but just thank you so much, and I hope to talk to you again at some point.
Okay, man.
All right.
Take it
bye.
Easy.
All right, people, I hope I don't have to explain to you why you should listen to the show of a man who can segue gracefully from why a girlfriend with a smelly vagina is like a litter box right into a summary of why Homeland Season 4 is amazing. Dr. Steve hosts, again, Weird Medicine, which is on XM 103 Sirius 206, the Opie radio channel. And thank God he also has a podcast, the Weird Medicine podcast. If you do iTunes or Stitcher or any of that, just look up Weird Medicine and you will get his show. It's one of my favorite podcasts. Please give it a listen. Find Dr. Steve on Twitter if you heard him this way and give him a shout out. I would appreciate it a lot. All right, we're out of here.
We're home free. School's out, baby.
Good show.
Nothing to talk about, nothing to critique. Great show, great guest tomorrow. You go home, have a glass of wine, whack off. I'll see you tomorrow.
That's the post-show critique?
Yeah, you're the best.
It's my time to go. I successfully burned all my bridges. Nobody loves me, and I don't love nobody.
Then he said penis.
Yeah. Then he said masturbation.
Then he said vagina. That was cool.
Had a mighty hard time, but I'm on my way. Had a mighty hard time, but I'm on my way. It's a mighty hard climb.